You're listening to Locked On Cavaliers, your daily look at the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Hello and welcome to the Locked On Cavaliers podcast, your daily look at the Cleveland Cavaliers. I'm Chris Manning, your host and the site manager over at FearTheSword.com, SB Nation's Cleveland Cavaliers site. As always, you can find this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcasts. A five-star review on Apple Podcasts is the best way to support the show. And today's show is all about the trade deadline. It has come and passed. My sleep schedule is very thankful for that because I will no longer be getting alerts at 11:57 at night as I put my head on a pillow and I can now get a little more reading. It's just a little healthier lifestyle now that the trade deadline is over. But joining me to break it down is perhaps the busiest man on NBA Twitter over the last couple of days because of all the work he does at his site, Early Bird Rights. You can read his writing as well at Fear the Sword, Peachtree Hoops, and a variety of other places. Jeff Siegel. Jeff, what's going on?
I am as tired as you are. I'm very happy that we're done with the trade deadline. And once the last few things sort of roll in, I think I'm waiting on like three little things like pick protections and one guy that New Orleans has to cut. And after that, I'm going to bed and I'm going to sleep until Monday because I am just not, I'm not really with it, but we're here. We're going to talk about trades and we're going to talk about signings and we're going to talk about the Cavaliers and how everything that happened today and yesterday affects them. And just we'll just keep it moving.
How much coffee have you had, or are you even a coffee guy?
I have never had coffee in my entire life.
Oh my god,
I am a ice water guy. I drink a ton of water and I just fight through it. And I was thinking about this, and today is Thursday, and it's about, what time is it? It's like 3 o'clock my time. No, it's 3:45 my time on the West Coast. I had lunch on Tuesday. And then I had dinner last night. And other than that, it's been like water and like crackers and stuff. And I've just been like just doing cap sheets and writing about trades and just messing around. And I've slept like maybe 8 hours in the last couple of days. And it's just been it's been a fun time. It's that kind of this time of year for me. This time and like the first week of July are my two like just super busy times. So, you know, if you have to work that hard a couple weeks a year and the rest of it is you get to watch basketball and write about it, you know, it's not a bad life.
No, it's not. Sleep is good, though. I am pro, like, let me get my 7 hours. At the ripe old age of 25, I am what the kids call washed. All right, so let's get into the Cavs deal. So they made a series of trades at this deadline. Rodney Hood, of course, goes to Phoenix. We have already talked about that on this show, but that was the first domino that fell. And then you get the Alec Burks trade that traded Nick Stauskas and Wade Baldwin away as well. They get a protected first-round pick that is basically 100% going to convey this year because the Rockets are going to make the playoffs. They also get Marquise Chris, and they get Brandon Knight out of it as well as the salary matcher, as Burks, an old friend, Amon Shumpert, goes to the Rockets in that deal. Interestingly, I was sort of surprised by that he went there instead of Burks, but that doesn't quite matter for this discussion. Jeff, when you look at, let's look broadly first, and then we'll get into each deal a little bit. What did you make of what the Cavs did at the deadline in getting another pick, getting multiple picks, really? Definitely getting a little bit worse right now, I would say, but really prioritizing those picks over anything else at the moment.
I mean, that's exactly what they should be doing. These two are, for where they are, I mean, they're obviously not like home run swings in terms of trades, but if you are a rebuilding team who has, you know, previously traded a lot of future picks because you were building around, you know, the greatest player in franchise history and trying to win titles, the cupboard was bare in Cleveland, and so they needed to restock it. And this is what they're doing with all of these trades, you know, dating back to the Kyle Korver trade, and when they got Alec Burks and they got a pair of second round picks in that deal, and then they send Burks out and they get a first round pick, and they send Hood out and they get a couple of seconds. Like, this is, you know, this is what they should be doing. This is exactly what they should be doing. And so, you know, the only problem you could have with it is that they didn't get off of the other, you know, high level salary that they have, the J.R. Smith, the Tristan Thompsons of the world, you know, those guys, you know, and maybe we'll see that this time next year because those guys are both under contract for next year. Maybe we'll see, you know, especially JR, we'll probably see him at the draft or right afterward. I would imagine that that's when he'll be traded. And so, you know, it's just for, you know, for what the, for where the Cavaliers are, this is precisely what they should be doing.
I think 100% my biggest long-term takeaway from where the what the Cavs did at this deadline is that they are going to be making other moves at some point. It obviously did not happen today, but I think you just look at the roster construction, you look at what they currently have and what is on the books running down the list. You have just a weird roster right now. It's by design, because that's sort of like they were prioritizing picks over everything else, which I do think was 100% the right move. But you look at the roster currently, this is where we're at. Kevin Love, Tristan Thompson, J.R. Smith, who's basically not on the team, isn't on the team functionally, Brandon Knight, Jordan Clarkson, John Henson, Delly, Colin Sexton, Marquise Chris, Jetty Osman, Larry Nance Jr., Ante Zizic, Channing Frye, David Nwaba. Now, there are two guys on this team currently, Channing Frye and Marquise Chris, that will be unrestricted free agents in the summer. So most of this roster is locked in. David Nwaba will be a restricted free agent. And J.R. Smith obviously has that very small cap hold on his contract for next season that makes him a trade chip. This is a roster that, like, unless the Cavs are, like, actively going to try to play, like, three bigs together or, like, just be as bad as, like, this roster would be over the course of a full season, there has to be some other changes here. Like, the fact that there are seven bigs on the roster, six of who are assigned into next season, like, cannot persist, I would assume. That being said, like, I think for the short term in getting the two first round picks in stockpiling that asset of those cachet of second round picks, they did the right thing, I think, in that regard at least.
Yeah, I mean, I think they absolutely, with what they have, they are doing the right things. They are trading their guys who can be traded for future assets. They're not using any assets to get off of a guy like Tristan Thompson. They're not going to use one of those first round picks to send out with Thompson to incentivize somebody to take his money. There's no reason to do that. So, you know, they're not going to do that with Knight. They're on the other end of it. They're the takers instead of they're taking on bad salary and Knight and willing to take that on for those picks. And the picks are going to be the lifeblood of the team over the next few years. And so it's important for them to get basically as many of them as possible and try to, you know, hit as many home runs as you can with the picks that they get. And obviously, you know, that Houston pick that is almost certainly going to convey this year. You know, they're not as good as they were last year. Houston did the same sort of thing last year where they sent out a first round pick to Atlanta and it was the 30th pick in the draft. And, you know, from what we have seen from the Rockets so far, that's going to be 21, 22, 23, somewhere in through there. And, you know, that's a significantly different, type of asset for Cleveland to pick up. And obviously, you know, the Cavs are going to have one of the top six or seven picks at worst. And so, you know, they're going to be able to add two, you know, key contributors to their team next year. You know, like you said, with all the big men, you know, if they go point guard, wing, or you know, double wing in the draft and in the first round, and all of a sudden your concerns about where they are in terms of roster construction for next season sort of wane a little bit when, you know, depending on where they go in the draft.
Yeah, and obviously they have to hit on those picks, and I think that just the hard part, I think, comes now. Like, they did the smart, obvious move. I think Obi Altman deserves all the credit for doing this. But now comes the hard part. And if you want to look back at what happened last time this team had to build without LeBron, they did the Kyrie Tristan draft absolutely right. Like, they're, you know, you look back at that night and Derek Williams were like two of the players some people thought the Cavs couldn't end up taking at that time. Obviously, they didn't go that direction. That would have been disastrous if they would have taken those two guys at 4-1, respectively. You look back, then you go to the Dion Waiters draft. They take Dion at 4. They take Tyler Zeller at 17. Obviously, did not hit there. So, like, getting the two picks is smart. Getting the two first-round picks, I think, is the place to be. But it also means you have to hit on them. And I think that will, like, that is the next step in this, is that Kobe Altman has to make the right selections there. Let's look at the Hood trade real quick, because that's sort of the simplest one to sort of look at here. I think that's a fair price for Hood. I think it made sense for Hood to go. I know why Stauskas and Baldwin are gone. I don't, you know, I would have been interested to see what Stauskas could have done, but, you know, it's not something I would be super upset about if I'm the Cavs. What do you grade that deal on a, like, an A to F scale? What do you look at the Rodney Hood deal for the Cleveland Cavaliers?
I mean, I think the Hood deal has to be above average. I mean, it's got to be a B, B plus. I mean, it's not like a franchise altering move. If they had gotten a first round pick for him, like that's a franchise altering move because Rodney Hood's not that good. But like, you know, for two second round picks, you see a lot of you know, protected first round picks that roll, you know, say it's lottery protected, lottery protected, lottery protected, and then it rolls into 2 second round picks. And it's almost as if 2 second round picks is equal to a lottery protected first round pick eventually. You know, you see that a lot with trades throughout the association. So when you can get 2 second round picks for a guy, that's sort of almost like getting one pick in like the 25 to 30 range, or like maybe the 22 to 30 range. And, you know, if they had gotten a lottery protected first for Rodney Hood, I think we would all be a lot higher on that, because a first round pick is still a first round pick. Like it means more than 2 seconds in sort of the way we talk about it. But 2 second round picks in terms of just asset play, in terms of value, which is exactly what, you know, what the Cavaliers are doing right now. They're just making asset plays. You know, I think 2 second round picks was fine. And especially the fact that they could immediately sort of flip Stauskas and Baldwin into Houston, and then Houston, of course, reflipped them to get rid of them. And so, you know, those guys have been on a journey over the last couple of days. But I think, you know, from the Cavaliers' perspective, I think this has been that particular trade was very good, and we'll see sort of where Portland is by the time those picks convey. But, you know, I think that, you know, if one of those picks ends up is in the sort of lottery of the second round, the top half of the second round, like they're gonna be very happy with that.
We're gonna take a quick break, and then we're gonna be back with more Locked On Cavaliers with Jeff Siegel from Early Bird Rights, Fear the Sword, and Peachtree Hoops. And we're going to get into the Alec Burks deal, which is really the big trade the Cavs made on deadline day. So stay tuned for that. And we are back. Okay, Jeff, the Alec Burks deal. Again, three-team trade with the Kings and the Rockets. The Cavs get that lottery-protected first-round pick. Again, very likely to convey. Got a second-round pick in there as well. Got Brandon Knight and got Marquise Chris. We'll get back to the pick and if this was like the appropriate price for what they did here. I will just say, I have no interest in Marquise Chris as a prospect at this point. I get why you maybe take a flyer on him for the rest of the season, see what happens. You're not tied to him money-wise next season. But there's nothing that he's done in the NBA that makes me think this guy is has a chance to be a good NBA player. I would not try to get him minutes over like anyone they have on the roster right now, frankly. And with Brandon Knight, I like that they have another guard. I like that they at least nominally have someone that can come in, play a little two guard, run some point, because they need a guy like that. His contract doesn't really matter for this group. I'll be interested to see if they try to flip him as an expiring contract in some situation, you know, at the deadline next year. I think that like there's value in that too. Like he could be someone that easily at next February, he's going to be flipped again. The pick is obviously the priority in terms of their assets. I would probably go Knights number two. Then you go that second pick. And then I would go Chris is like by far the worst thing that they got in that deal. What do you think?
Yeah, I think I would agree with that only because, well, I mean, it's, if you're grading it on an asset basis, then Knight has to be worse than Chris just because Knight is so much more dead money, and the fact that you have to pay him all of next year. And if they can trade him, that's something else. But like if the Cavaliers, as it stands right now, he is harming them more than Marquise Chris is, even if he's a better player. So, you know, I think the player plus contract on Brandon Knight is very negative. I mean, he's at best maybe a minimum guy and maybe a $2-3 million a year player, and he's making 15. Like that, there's a lot of the gap there is sort of, you could refer to that as sort of dead money on an active contract. And that's, you know, that's how I sort of tend to think about these things. And, you know, there's $12 million of bad money next year, whereas Marquise Chris has no bad money for next year because he's not under contract. And, you know, frankly, I don't expect him to stick in the league after this year. I just don't think that he sort of has the, you know, what it takes to be an NBA guy. But Knight, I think if you had to grade but the players on an asset basis, a player versus contract, Knight has to be the worst thing they got in the trade. But that's the price of getting a very good asset in that protected first round pick.
The protected first round pick, I think, will I think 100% was worth the Burks. I don't think the Burks trade is going to run super well in the locker room. I think like he was well liked. He was helpful. I think he was certainly much better than Hood. Certainly helped with offensive initiation, provided some scoring. Like he provided something that like I don't know exactly how they replace. Certainly, I think there's going to be a lot more asked of Colin Sexton now. Jetty's going to be asked to do more. I think whenever Kevin Love can come back, that is going to help alleviate that somewhat. It'll at least take some of that pressure if they can run the offense through him and if he can stay healthy. When you look at the just getting the pick though, do you think what they actually got is like the appropriate value for what they did in the Alec Burks deal, which is to help facilitate Houston getting off of money and then getting a player that maybe that is, you know, certainly a little bit better than Brandon Knight? Do you think like that what they got is fair value for what they're doing here?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a first round pick in general is worth somewhere in the neighborhood of $15 to $20 million in dead salary. Like we were just talking about, Knight is probably in the, you know, 13 to 15 range in terms of dead salary for next season, you know, depending on how much you like him and how much he can sort of give as a backup combo guard. You know, so they got a protected first round pick for probably cheaper than a first round pick would have cost them, you know, in another situation. But because Houston was so into the tax and needed to make a move like this to alleviate their tax concerns both this year and next year, they were able to negotiate a better offer on that side. You know, obviously Alec Burks has some value, so there's, you know, he is also a part of this, so that he, you know, if he himself is worth a low second round pick because he's expiring and Cleveland doesn't necessarily need him as much as another team would who's vying for the playoffs like Sacramento. You know, if he's got low second round value and then Knight's bad contract has, you know, low first round to high second round value, then you add those two together and you get a pick that's probably going to be in the 21, 22, 23 range. And I think it's sort of because Houston's not at the very top of the league and is sort of down in the Western Conference standings a little bit, there's a bunch of good East teams. They're going to be sort of in the low 20s instead of the high 20s or even 30. I think that's the big reason why this trade is, you know, just almost exactly the right value for both sides in this deal.
All right. So let's look at what comes next. We've touched on the roster a little bit. I want you to tell me, looking at your early bird rest calculations, let's just say where we are right now with looking at this cap sheet, you're looking at all the money they have on the books for next season. Where are the Cavs financially? What kind of flexibility do they have? Do you have concerns about the, I mean, obviously they're not going to be a free agency spender, but you look at like what money they have on their books right now. Are there concerns about what kind, like their ability to do anything or like maybe re-sign David Nwaba or just do something this summer? Do they have like at least some flexibility financially? They're barely under the tax right now. I'm at the, you know, about 10.9 over based on what the numbers in the sheet right now. But so where are the Cavs financially as we look towards the end of the season and into the summer?
The biggest thing for them is going to be moving J.R. Smith's contract, whether they cut him or just move him straight up. The $10.9 million that they're above the tax for 2019-20, which they don't have to sort of figure out until this time next year, but it is something that, you know, for long-term planning purposes, you do need to start thinking about. I think Smith is the key that they can trade him around the draft for somebody who, you know, makes about what he makes and then try to pick up another asset if they want to stay, you know, into the tax and then try to figure out their tax bill this time next year. Or they can just cut him before his full contract guarantees, and then they can, you know, that would sort of help them get under the tax a little bit, but they'd only be, you know, very slightly under the tax. David Nwaba's at about $1.9 million into their books on the cap hold, but that's not included in the $10.9 that they're over the tax for next year. Only salary goes into the tax, not cap hold. So if they're going to bring him back, that's going to eat into their tax, you know, their tax planning a little bit. Smith obviously is guaranteed a small amount of money, but is, you know, does count on that guarantee toward the tax. So, you know, they're going to have to, if they're going to make another asset play like this again next year, they're going to have to do something to get out of the tax a little bit. You know, whether that is moving one of their big guys and trying to attach an asset to get off of them so that they can get another asset back from another team, or doing something similar to this Burks Knight trade, where they trade out $11 million and get back 15. You know, do a small upgrades like that. Like those kinds of moves will be possible for them next year. But then again, all of this 2020 expiring money is just not going to be as necessary to trade this time next year, because it will expire in the summer. Whereas right now, a team like Houston sees $15.6 million for Brandon Knight for 2019-20. But if this was this time next year, a roster, and they can figure it out in the summer when he's going to be a free agent. You know, I think this was the time to strike with all of that. There won't be as many sort of financial moves, I don't think, this time next year, just from the layout of the league as it is right now, because so many of those contracts will expire, on July 1st of 2020, to make a lot of these kinds of moves going forward. So it was good for them to get those deals out of the way now. And if they are right on the cusp of the tax next year, which is sort of where we expect them to be, on top of the fact that they're bringing in, you know, these extra first round draft picks, I think it's something where they're not going to be as active next year, unless they have an opportunity to move a guy like Tristan Thompson, or, but that's, you know, other than that, I'm not sure exactly what their other moves are going to look like.
Does having the two first round picks, just having two first round picks limit their flexibility more? Obviously, it's something they should want. The young players matter more than like a bit free agency signing, but like depending on where that pick falls, obviously, because one will make more than four, etc. Is that going to eat into their space as well?
Yes. I mean, those guys will eat into their space for whatever they make. Right now, I have those the pair of them at about $7.8 million, but it's not. You know, it depends on where those things fall, and that is included in that 10.9 calculation. So it's not like they're 10.9 plus another seven for their first round pick or their first round picks. It's just going to be the standard 10.9 with those picks in hand. So it's, at least from that perspective, they're not so far over the tax. If they were to just cut JR over the summer before his contract guarantees, then they get under the tax just like that without any other moves. You know, if they were to then re-sign Nwaba and Nwaba wants $6 million, then, you know, they're probably right back over the tax, and that's not a good thing for them. So they'll have to make, they probably this time next year will make some sort of small financial move to get under the tax, the problem with that is that they don't have a lot of small salaries. You know, Nwaba might make the most sense as that guy. Ante Zizic might make the most sense as that guy. You know, they really like Jetty Osman, so I don't think it's going to be that guy. You know, it's not going to be Sexton. And then you get into Dellavedova, hence get off of those guys, rather than, you know, attaching a second round pick to get off of Ante Zizic next trade deadline would be a lot easier to do. You know, a second round pick to get off of David Nwaba would be easy next year. We've seen a lot of those trades this year. We'll see a lot, you know, we always see a lot of those kind of small financial moves that teams make around the deadline. So, you know, those are the sorts of moves that they're looking at this time next year, but it's not going to be anything big. It's not going to be the only way that it's something larger is if they trade their bad salary for somebody else's bad salary, the same way they traded Burks for Knight, the same way they've been trying to do that with some of their other guys. J.R. Smith as well would have been in that same boat if they had been able to trade him this year. Instead, they're going to try to do that at the draft. So those are the sorts of moves that they could possibly be looking at over the next 12 months or so.
We're going to take one last break, and then we're going to come back to talk about the rest of the deadline, the Cavs, and the context of all the other moves that were made. So stay tuned for more Locked On Cavaliers. And we are back. Okay, Jeff, so I'm going to start with one trade that you and I were talking about in Slack a little bit that I thought, basically when I saw the trade, it was a guy that I thought might make sense for the Cavs to pursue. It was a guy that obviously I got a lot of mailbag questions about on this podcast. He's an interesting name, and that's Markel Fultz. He ends up going to Orlando. It's a fake first-round pick, I think, basically. Jonathan Simmons, Fultz gets a fresh start. The Sixers get a veteran wing who can defend and is long and can hit threes. Basically, I look at that and I say that was a little more than the Cavs were going to really kind of, I think, get in there. You know, I don't know if I would have given up a pick for Fultz's point. I just don't know enough about that shoulder, about, you know, what's going on with him. But I don't, if that would have been like a lower price, I would have been like, well, couldn't you have got involved with Burke? Like, there's just, I wonder if there's a way they could have got involved. But when you, I think I see the final price, I'm not like, I would, if I'm Kobe Allman and I had interest, I would not feel as if I missed an opportunity there based on what Fultz actually was flipped for.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that Fultz drew a positive asset valuation in the first round pick that went back to Philadelphia, and then Jonathan Simmons, who, you know, is a fine player on his contract, and, you know, he'll probably be cut before his contract is up next year. But, you know, I think he's a small part of this, but the first round pick, the fact that Markelle Fultz fetched a positive valuation from Orlando, the fact that they were willing to part with a first round pick to get him, that is more than I would have given as almost any other team. You know, I don't think that, I think maybe if the Cavaliers had found a way to reroute the first round pick that they just got from Houston for full, a fine sort of play, I think those two assets maybe have similar value. But I mean, I've been talking about this for a couple of days with various people who have asked about it. To evaluate what Markelle Fultz is. Like, what is, you could tell me he's out of the league by this time next year, and you could tell me by 2022 he's on one of the All-NBA teams, because if he gets it with the shoulder, if he gets through his shoulder issues and he doesn't have the whatever mental block was in front of him with shooting a basketball, he's now, you know, the same prospect that we thought he was 2 years ago. And he's still the first overall pick in that draft. And he's still, you know, a dynamic playmaker, a dynamic ball handler, a big guy at 6'4" who can defend both the one and the two, and he can shoot. That's a really, really, really good player. But you could also tell me that the shoulder thing never heals, and he never gets back on the court after next year or the year after. So the ceiling with him is so far from the floor. There's so much uncertainty as to where he is between his floor and ceiling that there's no way that you could accurately evaluate him. Obviously, Orlando decided that he was worth the risk. He was worth the first round pick that they sent out. They must be comfortable with his medical information. They know more than I do on that front, because they, you know, I would assume they've seen his medical stuff. They've talked to him. They talked to his doctors. They talked to some of the people around him to try to figure out what's going on with him. So they feel more comfortable with that than I would, because I, you know, the other 20 teams, it wouldn't surprise me if 24 of them were like, he's a no-go. I can't risk my job. You know, if I'm a GM, I can't risk my job trading for him because of what's going on with him. So, you know, it's not surprising, I guess, that one team did take the chance, but it is, you know, it's surprising that, I guess, that he fetched an entire first round pick like that.
In the context of all the deals you saw, do you think the Cavs did an adequate job? I think Kobe Altman deserves credit for everything he did. I do think they did about as well as I would have liked. I didn't think JR was going to get dealt. Obviously, I don't think you're going to deal Kevin Love, considering he hasn't played since the beginning of the season. Tristan's been hurt, obviously. I feel, if I'm the Cavs, I feel very good about this deadline. I would not really feel like I missed any opportunities. I would feel like I got the kind of value I was looking for. Is that a fair assessment in your mind?
Yeah, I think that's a perfectly fair assessment. I think that's exactly how I would think of it. I think the biggest thing, and it's something that we've seen, it's not necessarily something that's happening at this deadline. It's something we saw with the Kyle Korver trade. It's something we saw with the George Hill trade. It's something we saw this week with the Hood and Burks trades. The Cavaliers know where they are. They know who they are. They know where they are in the hierarchy of the league. And that's almost just as important as the actual, like, moves they've made and the picks that they've gotten, is that they understand that they're in it for the long haul. They understand that there's no quick fix to what is ailing them on the court, and that they need to sort of take the longest view in the room, or one of the longest views in the room, and realize that over the next few years, it's not going to be particularly competitive, and it's going to be more important to keep piling up these assets, keep piling up these draft picks, and you know, hope for the best in the draft, and hope that your scouting department can put together, you know, accurate assessments of the kids coming into the draft, and, you know, hope you hit on one of them. But I think the bigger theme from this deadline and from this entire season for the Cavaliers is not exactly where they are on the court or which second round picks they got for Rodney Hood, but just the overarching theme of Kobe Altman and Dan Gilbert know where this team is. They know where they're going. We saw it with the list of head coaches that they might hire after Larry Drew after this season. They're looking at young head coaches, guys who are, you know, between 35 and 50, who can really, you know, grow with the team. We've seen a lot of hires like that. Brett Brown in Philadelphia was just like that. Now he's taking them to the next level. We see that with Lloyd Pierce in Atlanta, where he is sort of, he's in the first year, but looks like he's going to be, you know, in Atlanta for the long haul. I think that's the mentality, the overall mentality of the organization matters more to me than the like individual assets that they're getting for these guys. They know where they are. They know what the path forward is. They're willing to accept the fact that they're just, it's not going to be particularly competitive for a few years, but on the other end of it, they will make out better on the other end in 2023 and 2024. They're going to be a better team then than if they really like did everything they possibly could to compete this season, just to, you know, fall short of the eight seed and you know, get the 12th pick in the draft rather than a top four pick.
I agree. I think they did the right thing here. I think ever since, especially since I think Kevin went down, I think Kobe Altman has done the right thing in taking the long view, in taking a realistic approach about what this team was going to be. It's not going to be fun. It's going to require, I think, hiring the right coach. I cannot stress enough that they have to hire the next coach has to be the right hire. They cannot mess that up. They have to draft well. Obviously, if you get Zion, you get Zion. But if you don't get him, you have to nail that pick. You have to nail that 20 pick. These are the type of moves that are going to set them up for success. Give them the chance of maybe being a little better next year. I also would say, like, the based on their current roster and the fact that they are going to add young players, I think there's a sneaky good chance, again, that they're finishing in the top 10 of the draft next year, which if you're a Hawks fan, that's tough, because I think you would have thought you would have got that pick. But there's, I think, a chance that they're going to keep that pick. There's a pretty good chance of that. We'll see what the summer brings. But I think they are doing the right stuff here. Jeff, wrap it up on this. Just what is your anything we didn't talk about move wise? What was just your favorite move of the deadline? My personally, the Fultz one, I think, is the one that I will think about the most. Marc Gasol to Toronto's is a close number two for me. What is the move for you that just caught your eye the most on deadline day?
I mean, I think the Fultz trade, because of his wide value and because of how much we don't know about him, that's the most interesting to me going forward. We know, like, we sort of know what we're going to get from Marc Gasol and Tobias Harris, and obviously how those guys fit into their new teams is going to be very interesting. But Fultz, like, he's basically like he was just drafted by Orlando, because we don't know anything about him really. And so, you know, if he can play in this season, if he can play next season, that's going to be, you know, if once we see him out there, we'll have a better understanding of where he is. But I think that's the one that I'm most intrigued by, just because there's an asset going each way, a first round pick and basically a brand new player who we've just never seen before. So there's a lot of intrigue with that. I think, you know, the other moves that I thought were interesting were obviously the big ones with Harris and Gasol, and then just all of the little financial moves and how, you know, how you can sort of delve into what teams are thinking about their financial situation based on what they're doing. Obviously that's a little bit more of a nerdy answer, and that's why I do what I do. But, you know, I think that those sort of low tier financial moves from Houston, from Miami, those kinds of moves from Washington are really, you know, the most interesting to me. But again, I understand that not everybody's interested in that particular facet of the of trade season.
You can find Jeff on Twitter at JG Siegel. You can go support Early Bird Rights, the site he is the proprietor of. I hope that's a fancy term that you enjoy. You're the proprietor of Early Bird Rights. You can support that on Patreon. Go check it out at earlybirdrights.com. All the updated cap sheets. He's been killing himself forever, but especially these last couple of days, kind of keeping everything updated there. You can read his writing at Through the Sword. He has two great trade, great pieces up at Through the Sword, and you can read his writing at Peachtree Hoops and various other places as well. Jeff, as always, it's been a pleasure. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
Again, you can find this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. Find us on Twitter at Locked On Cavs and Facebook at Locked On Cavs. Me on Twitter and Facebook at CW Wright. We're going to be back on Saturday recapping Friday's Cavs Wizards game. So enjoy. And we're going to be back to basketball. Two games this weekend as we get closer to the All-Star break. So for Jeff, this has been Chris Manning from Locked On Cavaliers.